town.
The Life and Times of Chat Moss by Julie McKiernan. Scene 1. Formation.
Hi there. Cruise on in. Welcome to the Lancashire Mining Museum at Astley Green Colliery. The colliery closed in 1970 and was feeling pretty sorry for itself for almost a decade until the Red Rose Steam Society came along to give it a bit of TLC. Actually, a lot of TLC. As the museum stretches for 15 acres and has the only surviving pit headgear and engine house on the Lancashire coalfield. Both listed, whatever that means. Pretty neat, huh? Okay, so I'm Professor Hank Everglade, visiting environmental anthropologist from the University of Southern California. Now, my research and teaching broadly interrogate the intersections and frictions between cultural natural history and economic values, and the search for sustainable solutions to improve the quality of human life and protect the environment. But really, I'm over here because I just love your cute little bogs, particularly the amazingly awesome Chat Moss, which supplied a heap of coal for this colliery. So enough of the gobbledygook, let's cut to the chase and get into the swamp monster, shall we? 325 million years ago. Whoa. You, bro, would have been standing on the vast supercontinent of Pangaea, sweating like a Thanksgiving turkey near the equator, because this was, ta-da, the Carboniferous period. Most of the planet was covered in dense swampy forests, which were sucking a grip of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, leaving a pile of oxygen to make things grow real big. No, not dinosaurs, bro, you're way ahead of the game. But dragonflies, with wings as wide as gulls, roaches bigger than you ever want to imagine, and a swamp monster 2 meters long. This was Crassigerinus, or Thick Tadpole. Which is not some mean insult, but a pretty neat description of its muscular, streamlined body, which could move real fast to catch fish in its enormous jaws. Snap. But bro, you wouldn't want to be a fish back then. Because if you weren't swallowed by a swamp monster, chances are you'd be hit by a fallen tree. Now these trees were funny-looking fellas. Tall and pencil-thin, with tiny little roots so weedy that a stiff breeze could blow them over. Splat. Straight into the swamp. One on top of the other. But the bacteria, bugs, and fungi that should have been breaking these trunks down hadn't evolved yet. So the wood just kept piling up and piling up until the weight squished the bottom fossilized layers into peat, and eventually, coal. Years later, white rot finally turned up late to the party. No apologies. Just started munching away on that heap of dead wood and released a grip of stored up carbon into the atmosphere. Whoosh! The climate changed. Pangaea broke up into pieces. Dinosaurs arrived, stomped about for 180 million years, then got wiped out by a massive asteroid. Kaboom! We hit the big freeze. And as the ice sheets retreated, lowland areas like this were left with a heap of holes filled with dead green stuff. Now at first, the meltwater was full of nutrients, sucked up from the soil and rocks, so the green gunk rotted quickly. But as the water gathered, stagnated, and quite frankly started to stink, the oxygen level fell, and peat soil started to form, building the raised bogs, fens, and reed beds of the mosslands as we know it today. Amazing, huh? Now, in between all this boggy brilliance were areas of woodland. And I know you're going to find this hard to believe, being British and some of you northerners and all, but the rain actually eased up. So the ground got drier, and the birch trees got bigger, and along came deer and cattle and humans. Ta-da! Yup. We finally rocked up, drawing weird modern art in cave walls, sharpening flints to make arrows, and trying to work out the secret of fire so we could burn away the bushes to hunt and finally fix ourselves a decent hot meal. And how do we know all this? Because if we slice down into the 10,000-year-old peat, we can read it like a soggy history book of what grew in it, died in it, and set fire to it. We found flints and antler picks, which tell us, well, not literally, because that'd be just be plain weird, that hunter-gatherers were settling on the higher ridges between the bogs. But these little bogs, they started to cozy up together to create bigger bogs. And this meant that some plants could thrive and take over, like Areophorum or cotton grass. Its fluffy little seed heads get carried away with the wind, and its grass-like leaves can be used for treating diarrhea. But I just take my word for that. Then there's Calluna vulgaris, which sounds pretty rude, right? But this common heather was used to make brooms and a basic form of beer. And let's face it, if you lived in the Iron Age, you'd want a stiff drink. But nothing absorbed liquid better than the new super species of bog plant, Sphagnum moss. This bogland beast can suck up more than 8 times its own weight in liquid. That's why the Vikings used it to store water on their ships. And it's naturally antimicrobial, so it was used to dress wounds in World War I. Imagine the superhero movie, The Bog Avenger, starring Sphagnum moss. Sphagnum moss saves the world by sucking up all the flood water, then wipes out the bacteria on his way out. Sphagnum moss slurped up the Iron Age rainwater like a big squishy sponge as it oozed over the lowlands and clambered up over the ridges, staying wet and cool, obviously, even in summer. Forget Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis. Sphagnum moss is the real action hero, because even when it was finally defeated by death, it sank to the bottom of the bog to create peat. And there's something very special about peat. Apart from its amazing ability to absorb carbon dioxide, turn into coal, kill or slow the spread of microorganisms, burn for ages, or make your mom's poppies bloom, it preserves. Let's start with bogwood. The Irish call it Obonos, which is also the name of a Serbian Gothic metal band, but I'm talking about trees that have been buried in peat bogs. The waterlogged soil with little or no oxygen preserves the wood in an early stage of fossilization for hundreds or even thousands of years. The minerals and iron in the water combine with the tannins in the wood to turn it all shades, from golden brown to jet black, and make it so hard that it can only be carved with special cutting tools. And if peat does this to wood, what does it do to people? Look, I'm going to level with you guys. I feel it in the last 5 minutes or so that we've bonded, become buddies, but before I carry on, I need to be sure that you're all on board with me. What do you say? If I was to tell you something big and gnarly, would you be okay with that? Uh-huh. Okay, then. I'm here under false pretenses. I told those good folk here at the Mining Museum that I'd tell you all about the evolution of Chat Moss, and I think I've done a pretty fair job so far, but I'm really here to test the waters, so to speak, to try out my idea. It's the future of environmental anthropology education. Bog the Musical. Now, I know, it's new, it's radical, but let's face it, which can you name first, bro? A chemical element from the periodic table or a UK Christmas number one, huh? Yeah, point proven, I think. So look, I'm going to share with you a few of the scenes. It's still very much a work in progress, and maybe I'll even sing you some snatches of the songs. The curtain rises on a bleak-looking set of Chat Moss. It's August 1958, and some workmen are digging peat when suddenly one of them shouts, "Ah, look at this!" This, cover your ears if you're squeamish, is a severed head. They call the police, a chorus line in trench coats who search the area. We can't find nobody, ain't nobody to be found. So they bring in a boffin who says, "Hang on, guys. The tannins turn the skin to leather, so it survived all kinds of weather. It's no use looking for some John Doe. This worstly man was killed years ago." Ooh. The lighting changes, and the 50s characters shed their overalls and topcoats to become sweaty-looking Celts dancing feverishly round a fire. It's twilight, 120 AD, and a young guy's led in by a rope around his neck. He's just had some heather homebrew laced with mistletoe, so he's feeling pretty chilled, which is just as well, as his pals have decided to sacrifice him to the bog to increase the fertility of the land. It's a family show, so we don't actually see that, you know. because now dry ice gets pumped in to create this half-earth, half-water mystical borderland to the beyond. And the dancers scatter to the edges of the stage where they start to build rough shelters. Meanwhile, eerie music plays, and as the lights dim, a flickering, ghostly ball of blue light appears at the back of the stage. And as it floats and flickers in the darkness, a stranger enters. He's suddenly transfixed by the ghostly light. The dancers see what's happening and creep forward, singing. Beware the light, O foolish stranger. It leads you astray and into danger. The flame burns bright in the spirit's hand, which cursed roams this watery land, but tells your future, which won't be long, if you ignore our warning song. Beware, beware, O will-o'-the-wisp. Come on, everybody, sing along. Beware, beware, O will-o'-the-wisp. That bit still needs a bit of work. Of course, the stranger ignores the warning and follows the light, only to be swallowed dramatically by the boggy ground. In other words, he just falls through the stage trapdoor. Let's skip a couple of hundred years. It's now 1533, and John Leyland, poet and father of English local history, enters making notes in his itinerary, which is a sort of medieval travel blog. While he sings, the dancers perform an interpretive piece of modern dance behind him. Think lots of dramatic upwards and outwards movements, accompanied by an explosive soundtrack. We had forewarning of God's judgment plenty. Boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, ba-dum, boom. On the day Thursday, January 20. Boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, ba-dum, boom. The ground break forth and the moss burst high. That it splintered the trees and it blackened the sky. It poisoned the water, the fish, and the land. And it silted the Mersey as far as I land. Bog burst, fear the power, fear the worst. Come on, everybody, sway. Bog burst, feel the power, feel the worst. Awesome, guys. Now, just as John Leyland... Oh, shucks. I guess you guys need to move on now. I've got another group due. Oh, that's heavy. I was just getting started. But I guess you gotta bail and I gotta get back to business. But thanks for listening, guys, and keep an eye out for any new shows opening in the West End. Remember, you heard about it here first.
The Life and Times of Chat Moss is a Healthy Arts production, commissioned by the Carbon Landscape Partnership, supported by the Lancashire Peatlands Initiative of Lancashire Wildlife Trust, and has been funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Professor Hank Everglade was played by Chris Boyle. Julian was played by Martin Green. Bert the Miner was played by Andrew Kettle. And Eve was played by Joe Dakin. Written by Julie McKiernan and directed by Martin Green. Cole, Not Dole, original words are by Kay Sutcliffe, with original music by Paul Abrahams. Title and credit music is Leave It in the Ground, written by Neil McCartney and performed by Mary Hell. This project was produced by Michael Holcroft at Up Holland Recording Studio. We've got the wind to blow and the sun to shine to turn this great machine around. For all our children, leave it in the ground with the dead who built this town. So for all our children, leave it in the ground with the dead who built this town.